On the special episode of the ASC podcast with John Gailey, we have an interview with Bill Prentice, the Chief Executive Officer for the ASC Association. John and Bill talk about the issues facing the ASC industry at the national level and the impact of the proposed 2020 payment rules. We also interview Missy Danforth from the LeapFrog Group about ASC benchmarking.
Welcome to the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, a podcast for anyone interested in the freestanding ambulatory surgery industry. This episode is sponsored by Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies. The ASC regulatory environment is increasingly challenging, but organizations that outsource their regulatory oversight to Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies have an edge. AHS works with ASCs to oversee their quality improvement, risk management, emergency and infection control programs, run their meetings, develop education programs, and always be prepared for surveys.
Welcome to episode 69 of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey for October 14th, 2019, recording from our studio in Spencerport, New York. This is Sue Cronkite, Senior Nurse Consultant with AHS, and I'm here with John Gailey, the owner of Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies and one of the leading experts in the freestanding ambulatory surgery industry. He is the author and co-author of over 10 books about the ASC industry, including the Survey Guide for ASCs. John speaks frequently at both national and state ASC meetings on a wide variety of topics.
So, Sue, I'm exhausted, and here we are recording yet again on a Sunday afternoon. And by the way, for those of you that don't know, I'm also a Presbyterian pastor, and I had to do a full sermon and two services today. So if I sound exhausted, I am.
But you really enjoy that.
I do. I do very much.
And you enjoy this.
We've been working on the script for a while. I've got a lot of stuff going on, and we're going to talk about it in a few minutes here. First of all, I did want to apologize. We have this wonderful new studio with wonderful equipment. And clearly a user, that is me, who doesn't necessarily run it properly all the time. So when we listened to episode 68 after we recorded it, we noted that we were having some sound problems there. So we apologize about that. We think we fixed it, though even as I'm looking at the board right now, things aren't totally right. So I'll keep learning, Sue. Sorry about that. I know I don't always make your voice sound that great, so I apologize.
I don't think it's the machine. It's okay.
So the other thing that's going on is we talked about before we went on the air here, we have a backlog of episodes. So we have actually a significant backlog of episodes at this point.
A lot of interviews.
We have a lot of interviews, exactly. And if we don't get them out soon, some of them will become outdated. That's one of the reasons that we have to get Bill in today's episode, because it won't be very long before the 2020 final ruling comes out. So what we're going to do is we're going to go to at least four episodes a month for the next 4 months. And in fact, November, I think we're going to have six episodes because we have two state association meetings during that month.
Yep. So when I read the script, I said, John, the holidays are coming up.
Yes.
But that's okay. We'll be doing a lot of podcasts. And like you said, we don't want to lose those interviews. They were a lot of fun to get, and I think there's a lot of good information.
Why don't we just like hold a podcast during one of our holiday parties? put a microphone in front
Maybe
of people.
Maybe not.
So here's some of the exciting material that we have coming up. We have a cybersecurity episode. I think that might be next week with Nelson Gomes. We have an episode from the Pennsylvania Association meeting in November, an episode from the New York State Association meeting later that week, a special episode for New York State Surgery Centers, which we'll record during the New York State meeting. We're going to be discussing purchasing cycle and group purchasing organizations. We have, I'm very excited about this, getting an interview with Taryn English from AAHC about their 2019 quality roadmap. We've been working on trying to get Taryn on for almost as long as we've been trying to get Bill Prentice on. And of course, the 2020 payment rule is due in November, and we'll drop an episode as soon as that comes out. It's hard to predict when that will happen. And so much more. And we also have a new sponsor coming up. MedTrainer will be joining us sometime later this month. Not absolutely nailed down yet, but they're going to sponsor a series of three episodes over the next 3 months, covering a wide variety of topics, from interviews with their team in the area of credentialing, accreditation, and training and compliance. I'm very excited about this episode. Bill Frendis is a dear friend and a supporter, and we finally got him to do an interview while we were out in California. So it was a great interview, and we're going to include that in our second segment. And we're also going to talk to Missy Danforth from Leapfrog Group. This is timely, too, because I believe the timing for the survey that they're doing is coming up in a couple months here. I also thought it might be about time again to discuss our patron program. We haven't spoken about it in a while, but if you go to our website at www.ascpodcast.com and you go to the upper right-hand corner of the website, you'll see a link to our patron member program where you can support our program for as little as $10 a month and get a lot of great benefits, including access to additional content, policies, regulations, interpretive guidelines, risk assessments, and also the opportunity to interact with the hosts and other members. We're still building the patron website, but you can be on the ground floor and help support the podcast. Another benefit of the patron program is AEU credits for those of you who are certified ambulatory surgery center administrators, or what we call CASC certified. For every 3 months that you are a member, you'll be able to get a minimum of one AEU credit. And our goal is to offer actually between 2 and 3 per quarter, or about 10 to 12 per year. So, Sue, it's actually possible that you could maintain your AEU credits for CASC just simply by listening to our program. Not that you shouldn't be going out to conferences also and getting some real live credits, especially if you're going out to listen to me speak. So to become a patron member, click on the link in the upper right-hand side of the ASCpodcast.com website.
And continuing with what's going on in the podcast, we also have new advertising opportunities available where vendors can advertise on all episodes published since July 2019 for a very reasonable price. As this service expands, we will open up even more episodes, since there are now 69 episodes.
Phew, that's a lot going on. And Sue, we should also mention that we're really moving forward again with the premium podcast program and one of our favorite pet projects, the Administrator Bootcamp educational program. So more on that to come. I also wanted to do a follow-up on our discussion during the last episode for New York members. We noted that the Department of Health is requiring both new centers and existing centers to have gas-powered generators. This affects mainly GI centers in the greater New York City area, including two centers that we have under construction and two centers that we currently oversee. So just an FYI for those who heard that episode, we have been told that a Dear Administrator letter will be issued shortly that will clarify the department's position. So as soon as we get that Dear Administrator letter, we will certainly notify all of our clients, but we'll talk about it on the podcast here.
And some news from ASCA's October 10th Government Affairs Update is the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration is proposing to limit production of fentanyl. There's already been some shortages, so this could be a problem. I think they have good intentions for this, but it's just something that could cause some problems. So they're proposing to establish a 2020 aggregate production quotas for controlled substances. Specifically, the DEA is proposing to reduce the amount of fentanyl produced by 31%, hydrocodone by 19%, and hydromorphone by 25%, oxycodone by 9%, and oxymorphone by 55%. So it's just a good time to become even more proactive and work toward reducing reliance on these medications. We've talked about some centers having success with nerve blocks, I know, in the past, you know, in certain procedures. And I did find a lot of online guidelines and toolkits for alternative ways to address pain and suggestions for patient education, from managing expectations to, you know, reminders to lock up and safely dispose of any unused medication. So one site that had a lot of resources and links to other organizations' resources was the National Council of State Boards of Nursing, which is at www.ncsbn.org. So you can take a look there and the FDA and a lot of different places you can go to for information.
And again, this all ties into this ongoing movement we have toward more of a understanding that we need to reduce the amount of opioid use in surgery centers. We had an episode about a year ago. I didn't look it up before we got on here, but we've talked about it quite a bit on the podcast, and there's quite a bit of advice that's been given in past episodes about this area. So feel free to go back and listen to those episodes. Maybe I'll try to put links to them in the episode notes on www.ascpodcast.com.
And I wanted to throw out a little kudos to Lori Rodericks, our Director of Clinical Services. She had a recent interview in the fall issue of the CAPE newsletter.
So the CAPE newsletter, for those who are not familiar, is the newsletter for the Certified Ambulatory Infection Preventionist credential. And Lori was one of the first people that was certified with the CAPE credential. And we're very proud of her for that work. And she was also one of the first people to be interviewed for the new newsletter here.
She also was quoted in an article called Improve Outcomes Through Environmental Hygiene in ASC Focus magazine in the September issue, where she discussed the importance of thorough environmental cleaning, just stressing to pay attention to counters, surfaces, and all that environmental type things, even while you're focusing on the patient and the surgical site, and to be sure to follow the manufacturer's instructions for use, using the appropriate product on the appropriate surfaces. And she also made the point that things like poor hand hygiene and improperly trained staff can contaminate areas, even if they've been cleaned appropriately. So being sure to train people, your vendors, other observers that might be coming into the sterile or clean area, make sure they're educated about, you know, where they should be and stand and what not to touch.
And make sure that they don't accidentally contaminate the clean or sterile areas. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as I've mentioned before quite a bit, this is a huge focus right now for surveyors, is the whole area of infection prevention. And Lori has actually been on the road quite a bit visiting various centers and talking to them about infection control, working with centers that have had surveys recently in which they've had issues with their infection prevention. And we seem to be called on quite a bit to help respond to plans of correction for centers that have had serious issues. So this is part of what we do at Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies, is assist organizations that have recently had a survey that didn't go so well. And a big part of that is Lori going in to deal with infection prevention or sterile processing issues. So again, kudos to Lori for being quoted in those two articles. And we should also note that the electronic submission for the CAPE exam is January 1st to the 31st for the March 1st through 31st CAPE exam. So hopefully we have a whole bunch of people preparing for that upcoming exam. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's take a short break and we'll come back with an interview with Bill Prentice.
John and I are now here with Bill Prentice, the Chief Executive Officer for the ASC Association.
How you doing, Bill? It's great to have you finally on the podcast.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here with you both. I'm sorry it's taken this long for us to get together in this setting, but I'm hoping it's worth the wait.
Absolutely. You know, I was talking to Beth LaBoyer earlier today, and I said, it took us to go to California to talk to Bill. You've been at almost every single conference that we've been recording from. So, well, thanks so much for coming on.
Well, I'm hoping I don't disappoint.
So we've done a couple episodes about the 2020 payment rule that came out in, it was almost August, I think, by the time it came out. So I thought we'd just follow up a little bit with you as to what the ASC Association's take on the rule was, what some of the big highlights were, what you would like to have seen in there, and how you've responded.
Sure. We were really pleasantly surprised with this rule, and I recognized there weren't a lot of moving pieces to it compared to some of the rules we've had in the past. But we were particularly happy to see that CMS continued the policy it instituted last year in terms of updating ASCs for inflation using the same inflation factor as the hospital outpatient departments. That change from the consumer price index for urban consumers, the inflation factor that they formerly used, to the hospital market basket has been very positive for ASCs. In fact, we've received the two highest inflationary increases over the one last year and two, and the proposed rate of 2.7% for 2020 of my entire tenure at ASCOT. So it's really positive.
Nice. And as we've pointed out to our listeners before, just because we got the 2.2% increase doesn't mean that everybody is going to get a 2.2% because of the
No, there's obviously a lot of different issues. There's a lot of, you know, regional variations in payments that take place. And that is particularly apparent when you look at another provision that was in the proposed rule that we were very pleased to see, which was moving the total knee arthroplasty procedure off of the HOPD list and now allowing it to be performed on the ASC list as proposed. Mm-hmm. And if the one concern we have that has probably been noted by others is when you look at the national average of what they're proposing as a payment for that in the ASC space, it's around $8,600, mm-hmm. Which, again, varies widely based yeah. on the wage indexes and other reasons that you've probably informed your yeah. listeners about before.
Especially since we got people in New York City at the very high end and right. people out mm-hmm. in the rural.
So, yeah. yes, yeah. so that variation can range from $12,000, which is approximately what the national average for the HOPD price mm-hmm. is,
right.
down to around $6,000 in some rural areas.
Right.
So one of the things that we're really hoping is that a lot of the ASC members out there that are doing total knee procedures will submit comments to CMS by the September 27th deadline and recommend what they think an appropriate price would be.
Okay.
Now, I have to be honest. The likelihood of CMS changing that price this year is mm-hmm. very slim because right. they've really baked in those numbers already into the budget. However, they could use that data and hopefully increase it next year for mm-hmm. the 2021 payment year. So it's really critical that as many ASCs as possible submit data to CMS about what they think a fair price would right. be.
And the ASC Association has provided some tools for them to be able to do that.
Absolutely. We provide some template letters that members can use to add in their own personal information to and submit that to CMS. It takes only a few minutes to do mm-hmm. that. It's something that we're really encouraging mm-hmm. ASCs to do.
Especially those centers that are doing these procedures or considering doing them.
Particularly those. Because it's critically important. This is one of those situations where the more feedback CMS mm-hmm. receives mm-hmm. matters as much as what feedback they receive.
Right.
So we'll obviously be providing substantial feedback and comments on everything in the rule. But on things like this, where we really need to move the needle with CMS, mm-hmm. It's important to get a lot of feedback.
Right.
Yeah, and you've seen results from people giving feedback and from things you've said to them, so it is going to matter.
Well, and last year, the whole impact of the vascular access surgery, too.
That right, and that's the thing. Look, one of the things that we have been doing more and more over the years is trying to bring clinicians to CMS, to Baltimore, to talk about what they're doing safely on commercial patients mm-hmm. in an effort to get those procedures put on our allowable list for Medicare beneficiaries.
Right.
And so it's something we're going to continue to do. So if there's anyone out there that is doing something commercially that currently isn't on the Medicare list and would like to help us to educate the medical mm-hmm. directors there at CMS about it, we would love to hear from you.
Great. Any other surprises in this year's rule?
No surprises. I think we were still pleasantly surprised to see the addition of additional cardiac procedures.
Yes. Yeah.
That's obviously a growing area in the surgery center space. And it mm-hmm. requires pretty substantial investment in a mm-hmm. surgery center to be able to have the correct facility for those. But it's the type of work that ASCs were born to do.
Right.
And things that we can very safely perform and have been doing it on the non-Medicare population. And that's the type of thing that we need to see more of. But, as interesting as it is and as excited as, the ASC community gets about getting these new procedures added to our list, I think we can't lose sight of the fact that it's critical that we do more of the very common procedures mm-hmm. On Medicare beneficiaries for which too many are still being performed in the hospital yeah. outpatient space.
It's shocking that we still see a lot of those common procedures there, absolutely.
Well, using screening colonoscopy, one of the most common procedures performed in ASCs, the mm-hmm. fact that we are not doing even 50% of the Medicare beneficiary procedures.
Yeah.
is appalling.
That's a bit of a shocking statistic. I didn't know that.
When you think of the millions of dollars that is being wasted by mm-hmm. paying a hospital outpatient department roughly twice the right. amount of the ASC to perform yeah. that very common procedure, when we know that there's only a very small patient base that is really at risk
yeah.
where it needs to be performed in the hospital. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. We really need CMS and our lawmakers in Washington to really get a handle on that and try and find a way to migrate that care from yeah. the more expensive setting mm-hmm. to the surgery center. And if we do that, we can save the Medicare program hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars. We can save the Medicare beneficiaries a right, ton of money copays. On copays. And that really needs to be a priority for us. So it's yeah. as fun as it is to get new procedures like total knee added to our list, mm-hmm. we really have a lot of work to do to try and get these more common procedures,
yeah.
more of them migrated to the surgery center.
So Medicare quality reporting, you and I have actually talked about this a number of times over the last year, especially after the 2019 payment rule came out and, let's be honest, kind of gutted many of the Medicare quality reporting items. So this year they did not add back in 1 through 4. They've proposed to make it not through the billing system, which actually I think is a good idea. What are your thoughts on what happened with the Medicare quality reporting this year?
Yeah, I would say that the actions that CMS took last year to suspend those first four measures, which were wrong site, patient fall, patient burn, and hospital transfer, was a combination of two factors. One, the great results that ASCs were providing in terms of their data submissions, showing how rarely any one of those four potentially adverse events occurred. So that the fact that so many ASCs were reporting so few bad outcomes led CMS to,
and we don't need to report them.
Recognize that they don't need to do that. Then on top of that, there was also the fact that the Trump administration, as they've shown in so many other areas of government, are trying to reduce regulatory burden.
Right.
And I think they viewed that desire of trying to, CMS trying to show that they were reducing regulatory burden with the great results that we've been showing led to where we were with those four measures. Now, that said, as you're probably aware, last year in our comment letter, and I think this year in our new comment, we're still going to tell CMS that we would prefer to continue to report on those four measures and actually not just report on Medicare outcomes, but to report on all patient outcomes. That we think that those four measures, regardless of how good we've been doing on them, are so elemental in terms of their patient safety value that we should continue to report on them. So we'll be doing that.
And that's what's good about the proposed change here, where they would be reporting it through ASCQuality.org.
Well, exactly. And then, as you may know, also from this proposed rule, they've actually recommended that HOPDs actually report on those four measures. So again, that would allow for an apples-to-apples comparison across the ASC setting with the HOPD setting on those four very, I think, important measures. So it's something we're still advocating in support of.
So moving on, one of the issues that we come from New York, and one of the issues that came up a number of years ago is a surprise billing act that changed some of the ways that we do business in New York. And now suddenly we hear about surprise billing at the national level. So the Trump administration has proposed some changes. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. Again, this is another place where I think the President Trump himself, through some actions he's taken in terms of inviting in some patient groups over the past 6 months, has highlighted, the importance of this issue, that there are too many patients out there that are being subjected to a surprise medical bill that they were not aware of and quite frankly, probably can't afford to pay because of the way our system operates. Now, this obviously most often occurs in the emergency setting where a patient presents himself or herself or a family member in an emergency room, thinking that that hospital from prior knowledge is in network with their insurance provider and that they will only be subject to whatever copays or deductibles they usually pay, but then finds out that there was a provider in that emergency room or somewhere ancillary to that that was not in network. And as a result is, sending a bill to that patient that far exceeds what they expected. And I Congress has really spent a lot of time fighting over ways to try and address this issue. It's relatively bipartisan, which is a unique thing for what's happening in Washington, D.C. today, where you have Republicans and Democrats both acknowledging the same problem and acknowledging that there's a couple of different potential solutions to it. And that's, of course, where the battle is the solution. And that's where I think you're seeing the provider community, the insurance community, at odds with each other and amongst themselves about the right solution. And essentially it comes down to two approaches to deal with the surprise bill. In both of them, the end result is to leave the patient out of the middle. So the patient's not going to have to pay that surprise bill in either instance, but the two approaches are vastly different. One of which is more in favor of what the insurance companies want, which is to rely on some median contracted rate in that market that the out-of-network provider would be, forced to accept as full payment for his or her services. Versus what I think is the provider solution, which is to go to a baseball style arbitration. For those of you who don't follow baseball closely, the idea behind there is the provider would present to an arbitrator HRP suggested reimbursement for that procedure, and the insurance company would present theirs. Yeah. And the arbitrator would be required to choose one of those two numbers. So they wouldn't be able to split the baby. They'd either have to accept one or the other. Mm-hmm. The idea behind that and how it's apparently worked in baseball to most people's satisfaction is it results in both sides presenting a reasonable number.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they want to be the one the arbitrator accepts. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the problem is that I think most of the legislation that has received bipartisan support right now is defaulting to the negotiated rate rather than arbitration. So there's a lot of money being spent now to try and convince Congress to go the other way.
Yeah.
You create that kind of choice for Congress, and unfortunately, the most common result is they kick the can down the road and nothing gets done.
So that brings up the next question is, what chance do we have of that happening during this?
I think we'll know soon. I think that if this doesn't get to the president's desk by mid, late fall, I would say the likelihood of something happening in this Congress is pretty slim.
Yeah.
We're obviously going into a presidential election year, and we'll have the entire House of Representatives, one-third of the Senate up.
Yeah.
That is an extraordinarily large, distracting event for policymakers.
Especially right now with the environment in Washington.
Yeah.
So why don't you tell me a little bit about your legislative agenda for this year?
Sure. Well, we're obviously being supportive of our physicians on the surprise medical billing issue. Mm-hmm. Interesting thing is that because ASC procedures are scheduled procedures, we are not sending surprise bills to anyone, which is a good thing. However, we are aware of the fact that we have contracted anesthesia services, we have pathology services that are frequently used in the surgery center, and those providers may or may not be in the same insurance network as the ASC. That's the way that we're involved in that issue. Yeah. And what I would love to see is, rather than have to wait for a law or a regulation to mandate something on surgery centers, I think it would be a good thing for ASCs on behalf of their patients to do a better job of educating the patient about the potential for an out-of-network bill, even though they're coming to an in-network surgery center.
So, one of the things to look at probably is what New York did, which is a relatively simple system, even though everybody complains about it. It's just, notification. You provide the patient prior to surgery list of, the providers and who they're contracted with so that you have that information, if you haven't provided that information prior to that date of surgery. So at least that information's there.
Right. Whether actually the ASC is aware of it, but at least make the patient aware of the fact that there's a potential and recommend to the patient that they contact their insurance carrier
to determine
to make that determination. Yeah. I think that simple step will be very helpful. And I think, again, we want to do right by our patients. And that's a very simple way, I think, of helping them, because we all know how complicated healthcare is and healthcare financing is.
Yeah. Right. So tell me what's going on with the ASC Association.
Well, we're doing very well. We're obviously, have very pleased about what we've been able to accomplish for ASCs, with CMS on these past couple of payment rules. Every year, I think we're building greater support in Congress amongst both Democrats and Republicans for the things that we stand for. We'll be reintroducing our ASC bill in the next few days, which seeks to solidify some of the things that we've already accomplished, by regulation. And it's always good to get things locked into stone by having them be in law rather than subject to the whims of one administration to the next. We're obviously always looking to grow membership. Right. There are still too many surgery centers out there that don't recognize the value of what we and their state ASC association are doing for them. Mm-hmm. When we are, so small in terms of numbers, in terms of, relative to the hospitals and to the insurance companies, in terms of our ability to try and get up to the hill and impact change and spend money to try and, elect people that support the things that we support. That said, if we were all marching in the same direction, all, working together, we can really get a lot done. And so I would really hope that more surgery centers would understand that value and that the relatively small price of our membership really pays dividends in terms of things we're accomplishing, in terms of reducing regulatory burdens, you know, increasing payments with Medicare and Medicaid, working with commercial payers to try and make sure that they understand the value of ASCs and are doing more within their networks to try and drive care to us because it saves, you know, the system money. So I think we've been very successful in terms of trying to create a better public image of surgery centers, making sure that, you know, the health media, that policymakers, that members of the public have a better understanding of what a surgery center is and the good things that we're doing to control healthcare costs without limiting quality of care.
Right. Yeah. And all the other benefits that come with, especially we've come off of two incredible education programs. I have a vested interest in this since I'm on the education committee, but we really, ASCA 2019 and the winter seminars in January were just incredible.
Well, and John, you've been such a valuable addition to that with the speaking that you've done for us over the years. We're always looking to find the best people, the, the most accomplished experts in their field to come and talk about things that matter to the surgery center team, whether it's the administrator, the nurses, and other staff. And we're actually looking to focus more on that. We want to try and find ways to kind of identify different education for different folks on the ASC team so they can get the education they need to succeed in their jobs and in their career.
Right. And I think we just opened up registration for ASCA winter seminars, right?
Correct. In New Orleans.
New Orleans.
It's going to be a real fun place to be in February.
We're having fighting within the company as to who's going. So I'm going. I won.
It's a long weekend. It's Martin Luther King weekend.
Oh, is it really? Right.
Yeah. It's you know, every year we held it at the same week. So that there's that little extra opportunity for many folks to stay over an extra day. We're putting together some great education for it. And as I said, we're trying to make sure that that education is impactful, that it's going to help the folks who attend do better in their careers, provide better care in the surgery center, and help patients more.
Right. And then don't forget about ASCA 2020 coming up in Orlando in
It'll be in May.
In May.
So we're looking forward to that. We're already putting together, you know, and finalized a great education agenda there. 3 days of really good education on a wide range of topics, whether they're financial or operational or clinical, that can, you know, help surgery centers succeed.
Absolutely. So where do they go to join?
They go to ASCAssociation.org, and I've got a crack membership team loves to talk to potential members and explain the myriad benefits that we offer to surgery centers. And because, again, that membership has to matter within the center. The things that we do have to help the physicians, the nurses, the team in the surgery center. And then also we have a mission to try and make sure that the whole ASC healthcare delivery model succeeds and thrives.
Right.
And I think that we have married together those twin goals in a way that really makes membership really important and valuable.
Right. And I hear we're seeing each other in Ohio
in
a couple of weeks. And then I heard that you're coming to New York also again. So
I will be coming to New York again. Some great work going on in New York in terms of the establishment of a kind of a rebooted state association.
Thanks a lot, by the way, to the ASC Association. You really did help us out. I mean, that's not generally known out there, but we really, many of these state associations are struggling because they just don't have the resources. And ASC Association has been great. Allie, you know, with your organization has been great helping us out. So thank you.
Well, thank you. Because, you know, I always say that, you know, belonging to and supporting just either your national association or your state association is like insuring one half of your car.
Right.
You really need to be protected all the way around. And the only way you can do that is to belong to both your, you know, ASCA at the national level and your state association. And, you know, we've been working very hard over the years, and particularly in the last few years, with actually the support of some of the large management companies to try and infuse some additional dollars into that state affairs effort to, one, help put out a particular fire if there's a significant legislative or regulatory challenge in a specific state, to have some resources to bring to bear to their that the state association may not be able to afford, as well as also to go into some states, like, for example, New York, and help them create a more robust state presence.
Right.
Now, there are some states out there that are too small, have too few surgery centers to actually have a full-fledged association, but they still should have some kind of alliance, some kind of way to unite, particularly when it comes to a legislative or regulatory challenge, because something bad that happens in a small state, say Wyoming or South Dakota, can have ramifications in larger states, because state lawmakers talk to each other, they look to see what other states are doing. So if a domino falls in one state, it can quickly go to another, which is why we have to always be kind of mindful of what's happening around us.
Thanks so much, Bill. I really appreciate your time.
Oh, thanks very much. I'm sorry it took this long for me to get in front of the microphone, but hopefully it won't be my last.
That's absolutely true. So thanks again, Bill, for giving generously of your time with that interview. Next, we were able to interview Missy Danforth during the California State Association meeting, where we had a discussion with her about the benchmarking program that she is working on over at the LeapFrog Group. You might recall, if you listened to our special California episode, that I moderated a session with Missy and a few other speakers about how ambulatory surgery centers get their message out to the users of healthcare services, particularly surgical services. So this interview with Missy kind of talks about how the LeapFrog Group can assist in that and how you can participate in the LeapFrog Group's information and also how that information gets to the end users. So here's our interview with Missy Danforth.
John and I are talking to Missy Danforth, the Vice President of Healthcare Ratings for the LeapFrog Group.
So it's great to have you on the podcast. You and I met at ASCA 2019. We talked very briefly, and at that point, you were just rolling out your ASC program. So let's start by talking a little bit about what the LeapFrog Group is and what they do.
So let me tell you what we're not. We're not the child's toy company, though we're often mistaken for that.
There's worse things to be mistaken for, I guess.
That's true. We're a national not-for-profit. We were founded almost 20 years ago, back in 2001, by some very large national employers that are now really considered global employers, GE, GM, Marriott. It was a bunch of global HR directors who got their hands on a copy of the IOM report to Err as Human. And one of those heads of HR's name was Bruce Bradley, and he was with GM. And he took the report and the number of lives lost due to preventable medical errors, and he actually applied the equation to his employee population at GM.
Wow.
And he realized that this really had a significant impact on their employee families, their retirees. So he was very motivated, along with some of his colleagues, like Arnold Milstein and others, to do something about it. And what they decided to do was to form LeapFrog. We're called LeapFrog because we were founded to make giant leaps forward in the patient safety of healthcare in the United States.
And to put it into perspective, right now, as I understand it, the third largest
cause of death
is medical errors.
That's right. And that's just in hospitals, right? And so medical errors happen in lots of other healthcare settings.
Right.
And that number comes from the hospital setting. That's where we focused, right?
Yeah.
So for the past 18 years, we've been focused on inpatient care because it's the place where a lot of people go and die. And so as you noted in 2019, it's our first opportunity really to go outside the hospital.
Yeah.
We're now looking at ambulatory surgery centers and hospital outpatient departments.
And why are you looking at us? Other than we're wonderful people.
Right. So we were founded by large employers and we're still governed by large employers. So they make up our board of directors. They pay a huge percentage of the healthcare bills in this country. And they're seeing what everyone's seeing, which is that surgeries are leaving the hospital and going to ambulatory surgery centers. Or within a hospital, they're leaving the inpatient setting and going to the outpatient setting, either on campus or off campus hospital outpatient departments.
Right.
As this happens, what they're seeing is that the cost savings are substantial.
Right.
The patient experience is favorable. They want to be assured of the patient safety and quality. I think that they want to take advantage of these opportunities if they're more cost effective, better patient experience, but they also have to be safe and high quality. And we just don't know.
Right. So your goal is to try to
find out, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So 20 years ago, there was virtually no information available about the patient safety and quality of hospitals. Mm-hmm. And now we know all kinds of things. If you ask a hospital executive, he'll say we know too much.
Right.
But if you try to find information right now, even on your health plan's website about hospital outpatient procedures or ASC procedures, there's virtually no information. The only piece of information most people can see is cost. Mm-hmm. What we know about cost is that most people equate high cost with high quality. And so they may see that it's $10,000 at the hospital, $5,000 at the ASC, and not understand what that difference is about. Mm-hmm. We think it's critically important to provide that quality and safety context, because if you can pay $5,000, get the same outcomes, that's going to be the better choice for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. So one of the challenges that we have is we live and breathe quality improvement. Our company, Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies, we manage quality programs for ambulatory surgery centers. So we feel like we're doing a great job, but clearly we're keeping it to ourselves, right? And I think that's the goal that you at Leapfrog have, is how do we get the information that we've been gathering for 30 years out to the public? And then how do we, I mean, we've been challenged over the years of benchmarking ourselves against other places, because now we have this great data. How do we benchmark it? And we don't have a lot of resources for doing that. We got ASC Association, mm-hmm. which has a great benchmarking product, you know, and Medicare quality reporting, which varies depending upon, you know, whatever the prior year's political environment was or the administrative environment was. So, you know, we're anxious for this type of statistic. So tell us, lead us down that path. How can you help us and how can we help you?
So you're right. We do want to give ASCs and hospital outpatient departments an opportunity to make public some of the great things they're already doing. Mm-hmm. But we want to do it in a very specific way. So first is we want to use only evidence-based national measures, right? So all of your clients may be in one part of the country, but our members have covered lives in almost every state of the country. In fact, FedEx has an employee in every zip code in the country.
Yeah.
They need to make sure that if they're trying to do benefits planning for a year across the country, they have a single set of measures they can use, whether the ASC or the hospitals in Massachusetts or in California. They also want to be sure that we're using strong clinical evidence, mm-hmm. that if we ask hospitals and ASCs to do something or to measure something, it's really going to result in better, safer care, mm-hmm. right? And so we take the responsibility on to make sure that we're bringing the best science, that we're standardizing measurement across the country, so mm-hmm. no matter where you live, and then also the transparency piece. And I think that what we've found from the ASC community is that they're open to transparency. Yeah. They're embracing transparency.
We're excited about it. We're proud of ourselves.
Exactly. And so our job is to give them a way to do that that's feasible,
right?
That's engaging, and that feels valuable to them.
Yeah. And it's evidence-based so that it's going to pass the test.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. So here's the counterpoint. More than half of those ASCs out there, they're not the big guys. You know, they don't have the resources. You're used to working with hospitals, of course, and hospitals probably assign somebody to fill out the survey that you might prepare. And if it takes them a couple months to do that, you know, so be it. They have got the resources. You know, the person filling out a survey at a surgery center is going to be the same person who is running the operating room probably for the day. So tell me how you're working with the industry and ambulatory surgery centers to make this process easier for them.
So first, we're using some experience that we do have from the hospital community. I think when people think of Leapfrog, they think of the big name brand hospitals. But in fact, we have a couple hundred critical access hospitals that have been doing our survey for almost 20 years. So these are hospitals with 25 beds.
Yeah.
These are hospitals in very remote areas of the country. And these are hospitals that are not well-resourced, right? We also have
similar to ambulatory surgery centers.
Exactly. We also have safety nets hospitals around the country who are also not as well-resourced. They don't have people dedicated to do this. And so we've done a few things. One, we've made it a priority to align with other national standards where they exist. Mm-hmm. So if there's a really strong accreditation standard that AAAHC, the Joint Commission, the leading creditors are doing around maybe medication safety, we're not going to create our own, mm-hmm. right? We know that 3/4 of the ASCs in the country right now are either accredited so they can participate with Medicare or on their way, right? They're on that glide path. So we don't want to create something different if there's something good out there. So that's one thing. There's going to be questions on the survey. You're already going to know the answer. You've done the work because you had to do it for accreditation.
Yeah.
Two, we're trying to find evidence-based national standards that resonate with purchasers and consumers. And a lot of times what we found is it's the structural measures. And I've talked to some folks within the ASC Association and Quality Collaborative, and they're leaning towards the same kinds of measures, right? So things like what protocols you have in place for hand hygiene, what are you doing around culture of safety? And what we found is that that kind of data collection tends to be less burdensome, but extremely meaningful for the people using the information. Right. We estimate that it takes about 4 to 5 hours to complete our ASC survey. What we did was we put out a national paper pilot in January, and then we launched the survey to every ASC in the country in April.
Yeah.
We've been doing key informant interviews every month, and we're asking questions like, how long did it take you?
Yeah.
Did you have most of the information? What couldn't you find? What did you know you had, but you didn't have it in your facility? Maybe the anesthesiologist group has that information, or physicians keep that information. Yeah. So we are trying to find out all of the barriers, and then we are strategically moving forward to try to reduce those over time.
Okay. So you said on average, it might take about 5 hours to do this. Where are you in the cycle right now for the 2019 information gathering?
So it opened on April 1st. It closes on November 30th. So there's actually still a lot of time for ASCs to submit a survey for the first time. So they have all of September, October, and November.
Right. And you're going to lead them through the process. So if somebody starts going into it and they're confused or they need some help, there's somebody to call, right?
There is. We actually have free 30-minute monthly technical assistance calls every week from now until November 30th. We scheduled them for 30 minutes during people's lunch hour. Yeah. And the reason we did this is because we understand that it's someone who's answering the phone, right, who's doing scheduling, maybe who's also doing some pre-op setups, who may have these questions. So we want to give them an opportunity to call in for 10 minutes, ask their questions, and get off the phone. To call in for 15 minutes, ask their questions, and get off the phone. The ASC Association has been helping us get the word out about these opportunities, and we've had good participation so far.
So you're already looking at some of the data. Has there been any surprises?
I think the first one is participation. So we didn't know what to expect. It's the first time we were doing this. And we've already had over 300 ASCs submit a survey. And based on the security code request we received, we're expecting about 500. So 500 ASCs in the first year. We expected to get mostly ASCs that were part of management companies, right? Who had other people that could help them.
And were being encouraged by the company to
do that. Yeah. We are getting those, but we're also getting independent ASCs. We're getting single specialty ASCs. Yeah. We're getting independently owned multi-specialty ASCs. I think we're getting a more diverse group than we originally thought we would. And we're very, very pleased about that.
Well, and I think one of the surprises that you might have, if I can read into this a little bit, is that we care about this, that we want this data back. We, you know, it's not that we're just required by accreditation organizations to do benchmarking, but we know that the more we do, I've always said this too, doctors want information. They're information junkies. And one of the first things they're going to do is they're going to say, you know, okay, how's everybody else doing it? And this is one of the things that you can help with is give
that
data.
And what we're doing this year, so we made a commitment to ASCs in 2019. We said, listen, give the LeapFrog ASC survey a chance. Fill it out. Give us your data. We're not going to do any public reporting in 2019. Right. So whatever you send us, we're the only ones that are going to see your facility's information. But what we're giving them back is a free confidential benchmarking report.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And what we've told them is even though we're not going to publish it, if a health plan, an employer group, someone knocks on your door and says, hey, we're thinking about doing something, a bundled payment with you.
Yeah.
We want to know what your quality is like. You can hand them your LeapFrog benchmarking report. We're not going to put it on our website, but we want you to use it, right? So you've put in the work. Mm-hmm. We want you to use it. In 2020, we are going to do public reporting, though. You're going to be able to come to our website, search for an outpatient procedure, and see both HOPDs and ASCs that do that in your area, and compare them on some safety and quality metrics.
So this is very exciting to us. Now, of course, we have clients that are HOPDs and ASCs. But I think we want to compare ourselves because I think that in general, we feel that the ASCs, you know, perform very well against and perhaps hopefully better than, you know, the average HOPD, mainly because of the difference in the types of people that come to those centers. Okay. So in the future, how is that information going to be disseminated? You know, obviously you have your the people that support LeapFrog. How do we get that information to everybody else so that they can use it also?
So we have a very well-utilized public reporting website, but we also have partnerships with a lot of national and regional health plans and other transparency vendors. They actually take our data and they put it on their websites.
Okay.
So even though you only report it once to LeapFrog, it might be put on 20 different health plan websites, 3 transparency websites, right? Yeah. A lot of different employer groups that we work with actually print out the information and they put it in their open enrollment packets.
Yeah.
So it goes so much further than LeapFrog's own website.
Right.
We work with 35 different business health coalitions around the country. We call them regional leaders. They're LeapFrog on the ground. So in California, it's the California Business Group on Health. Right. In New York, it's the Northeast Business Group on Health. They have as their members the largest employers in those regions. They partner with LeapFrog and make a commitment to look at the data and use the data with their employees and with their health plans. They've been doing it with our hospital survey results for years. And starting next year, they're going to be doing it with these ASC survey results.
Right. Now, important to note that there is no cost to the center for doing this.
Except for the time it takes to have someone do it.
Right.
We don't charge. And we've never charged. And we don't plan to charge in the future. So you do the survey for free. You get your benchmarking report for free. And next year, the results will be published for free. We're not a pay-to-play organization.
Understood.
Our mission is transparency, and we want our data used in a meaningful way.
And the deadline is November 30th, the internet. So I guess we need to get this episode published before then. We'll definitely work on that. And we'll also put links to LeapFrog and to the application process. Tell us, though, how do you participate? What do you do? What's the next step?
So when you come onto our website, there's a link to submit a security code request.
Okay.
You just need to fill out some demographic information. We email you the code with a link to the hard copy of the survey. You can start filling out the paper survey, and then it takes about 30 minutes to enter the information online.
Mm-hmm. So again, we'd like to really encourage our listeners to consider this. I think, especially if you've been listening to our podcast for the last couple of years, obviously you're hopefully doing all the stuff that we tell you it would be a good idea to do, and you'll be well prepared for acting on this. But I think as an industry, speaking on behalf of the industry, how important this is that we remain transparent, that we find ways to get the message out there. We've got a great message. I'm glad to hear you as a, shall we say, representative of the employers out there that are looking for this data. You know, we have to find a way to do it. And I think you've got a great solution that helps even the smaller centers that don't have the resources to do this, to get that message out there. So thank you so much on behalf of the industry for this.
Thank you.
So thanks for coming on our podcast, and we'll put the links up there for your information.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you, Missy, for taking the time to talk with us. Now let's take a short break. So let's talk about some upcoming events in the ASC industry.
Every episode will inform you of upcoming events. If you would like your event to be included in the podcast, please send the event information to info@ascpodcast.com.
And I want to remind everybody that the ASC Podcast with John Gailey is available to support your ASC association. John is available to speak, and we can record a podcast from your meeting.
The Indiana Federation of Ambulatory Surgery Centers Fall Conference and Trade Show is October 18th, 2019 at 502 East Event Center in Carmel, Indiana.
The Minnesota ASC Association's 2019 annual conference is October 24th and 25th in Minnetonka, Minnesota.
The New York Metro ASC and Healthcare Management Symposium is November 1st, 2019 at the Marriott Marquis in the heart of Times Square.
The Pennsylvania ASC Association's meeting will be November 4th, 2019 at the Hershey Lodge in Hershey, Pennsylvania.
The New York State Association of Ambulatory Surgery Centers Fall Conference is in Tarrytown, New York on November 6th and 7th, 2019.
The California Ambulatory Surgery Association's 12th Annual Seminar, Infection Prevention and Surveillance in the ASC, is November 7th and 8th in Costa Mesa, California.
The Washington ASC Association's 2019 Annual Education Conference and Trade Show is November 14th and 15th at the Tulalip Resort and Spa in Tulalip, Washington.
ASCA's 2020 Winter Seminars are in New Orleans, Louisiana, January 16th through the 18th.
The AORN Global Surgical Conference is in Anaheim, California, March 28th through April 1st, and includes a day and a half of ASC Summit for administrators, directors, business and clinical managers, and staff focusing on financial management, team communication, multimodal pain management, and much more.
Iowa Association of ASC's 12th Annual Education Conference is April 17th and 18th, 2020, in Johnston, Iowa.
And of course, ASCA 2020 is in Orlando, Florida, May 13th through the 16th.
Well, that's it for this episode of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey. Join us again, and please spread the word about our podcast with your friends and colleagues, and do us the honor of hitting the subscribe button.
This podcast is an educational and operational tool and is not intended to be a comprehensive resource for all the rules, regulations, and standards that an ambulatory surgery center must meet. The advice provided should not be considered as, nor does it constitute legal advice or opinion. When reviewing specific situations involving legal and regulatory issues, attorneys and other professionals should be consulted. This has been a production of Eden Group Development, All Rights Reserved. We would like to thank this week's sponsors. First, Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies, one of the nation's leading regulatory compliance and financial oversight firms. For a free consultation, contact John Gailey today at 585-594-1167 or through email at info@ah-strategies.com. And Eden Group Development, which publishes ASC Regulatory Compliance Series, the ASC industry's leading books, including the Survey Guide for ASCs, a guide to the CMS conditions for coverage and interpretive guidelines for ambulatory surgery centers, and Ambulatory Surgery Center Governance, a guide for ambulatory surgery center owners and governing body members. These must-have books are available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble or directly from the publisher at reg-books.com. That's reg-books.com. If you are interested in advertising or sponsoring the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, please email us at info@ascpodcast.com. We would love to hear your questions and comments. Please email us at comments@ascpodcast.com.